Maybe I was trying to think of a Stephen King game that we can play or something like that. Or, like, give you the title of a Stephen King novella and tell
yes!
me I'm making
oh,
up.
Can I just say...
Fuck yes, I would play this game.
I'm still going to do this. I'm going to ruin the joke for you, but I won't ruin it for you, the Facebook public. But what I was going to do, but I don't have the tools for it on my more computer. When you posted your cover photo update...
Yeah.
Have you seen those... things on Facebook where it's like, which are you? And it's like, put this react for this and put this react.
Yeah.
I was gonna do, what Pazuzu face are you? And find like all the different faces of Pazuzu in the movie and associate them with like the emotes.
Oh, that would be so good.
Welcome to another mini episode of Why Did We Watch This? I am your host for this week, Lee Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Ravel.
And I'm Brendan Drischler.
Hi!
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 It's fall.
It's fall.
Hi.
It's fall.
Hi.
And it's a miraculous year where two of our episodes fall within the Halloween time frame.
They fall. Within the Halloween times?
They autumn within the Halloween times.
Yeah, so we do not have a full movie for you today, but we do have a mini episode. We'll be introducing our movie for within 2 weeks. That will be... Stephen King's Riding the Bullet from 2004, directed by Mick Garris, starring Jonathan Jackson, David Arquette, and Barbara Hershey.
Mm-hmm. Not a TV movie.
Not a TV movie. You could have flipped me.
And weirdly, Erica Christensen is in this, too.
Yeah.
Kind of an also-ran of the 90s.
Yeah, I will tell you the three people that I mentioned are the prominent ones.
Yeah,
in
okay.
TV.
Chris is just listing names that he saw online. It's not interesting.
And that I recognized.
Yeah. I'm just clinging to some reality here, people.
I'm trying.
Hey, Kid is a name, okay?
We're joined also tonight by the newest roommate of our apartment.
Dog boy.
The skeleton.
He's a dancing skeleton.
He's so beautiful. He's working on his acting right now.
I wanted to do this movie. We have sort of two Halloween-y movies we'll be doing this year. This was one I was sort of looking forward to doing. It's not my movie that I put up. I'm not going to tell you it's a good scary movie. I'm going to tell you there are reasons I like it.
Okay.
We'll get into that in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
great.
The drink that we were doing for this is a little bit different. The title of the movie, Riding the Bullet, references a, like, roller coaster at a sort of, like, fairgrounds. That's meant to sort of be an analogy for, like, facing your fears, like riding the bullet. You have to face your fear, or you face your fate.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is a little thing called, we're going to do a shot of the bullet, bullet shot. And anyone can play along with this at home. All you have to do is go into your mama's liquor cabinet, whatever you've got lying around.
Yep. Get out your hairpin and just get to work on that lock.
If you're us, you've got a lot of shit lying around. You might not have a lot. But get, you know, 4 to 6 liquors.
I was gonna say 6 and 6. Get
six
a
and
die,
six,
right?
Yeah.
You gotta die.
Hopefully you've got 6 and 6. Get 6 and 6 liquors. Six
right.
liquors, six mixers.
Yes.
Roll 2 6-sided dice.
Yeah.
Those
one
are
the square kind.
First one's your liquor, second one's your mixer. That's the shot you have to do.
Yep.
So you're facing your fate. You
there it is.
Shot of whatever the dice decide for you.
Yes.
And we're going to do that, each of us.
Yeah,
each
so
of
we're going
to
all have 3 different experiences.
Yes.
Slash, we might all end up having... 6 different experiences, because is one shot ever enough when you're riding the bullet?
Yeah, you know what? We can get in the single rider's line and get back in.
Good night, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Alright, so that'll be in 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
This week, I wanted to talk about something that is Halloween adjacent, and this movie adjacent, because it's sort of why I picked this movie. I wanted to talk about movies that nail a certain atmosphere, or that are really that deliver a really solid atmosphere. And I have a vague definition of atmosphere that I've sort of broken out into 3 different subcategories, because there are 3 different things that I think I identify with when I talk about atmosphere. First, let me lay them out real quick, and then we'll dive into them.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one are just purely, like, visually...
This is some great ASMR we've got going on.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Movies that nail something really visually, like wow, that looks wintry, or wow, that looks Halloween, or this looks fall, or, like, any sort of movie that has a solid visual theme to it. The second category being movies that evoke a certain feeling in you very strongly and very clearly. And the last category being movies that you... it's sort of a vaguer and a more specific thing at the same time, where it's like a movie that you associate so specifically with a certain thing, like a feeling or a memory, or just like a weird association that you forever formed with this movie for some reason. So let's start with visuals. Does anyone have any movies that they feel... I can start, obviously. I've thought about this a lot, but movies that you strongly associate with like a certain visual look or that you think nail that visual really well.
I got a few. I'll just throw them out here.
Yeah,
let's do it. All right. So I got a list. We had said earlier in discussion that we don't need to go into these ones, but they should be mentioned, which is Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
I would also add Fellini to that, just because like there is you know an aesthetic going on. There,
we're not into I don't think any of us in this household are we don't cotton to any Wes Anderson.
We're not a Wes Anderson household.
I don't hate him. I've even enjoyed I enjoyed Grand Budapest Hotel, but I never sit I never sit back and think, like, what an amazing filmmaker. Like, I'm never blown away by his movies,
no,
but...
because we're not straight white guys.
I'll rest my eyes upon them without complaint.
Yeah. The actual movie list that I have here, so I've got Batman Returns, Brazil, Dick Tracy, Dread, Edward Scissorhands, Logan. While it's not an example of a good movie, it is certainly an example of one that's, like, nailing a certain feel to it. Manos, Hands of Fate. They say in Mystery Science Theater that every frame of this movie looks like someone's last known photograph, and that's a really great, like, that really nails the aesthetic that Manos has.
Who said that?
It's in the,
that's
Joel or someone.
Genius.
Moulin Rouge, A Quiet Place, Shock Treatment, I thought, still really does have a certain look to it. Sin City, regardless of your thoughts on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Speed Racer.
Yeah.
Tron and Tron Legacy, and Zodiac.
Tron and Tron Legacy in different ways.
Yes.
Mm.
Because they're very much reflections of computers at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I just listed them together
thing,
but, like, it is two different visual looks.
That was just my kind of thought.
Sure.
It's, like, weird, like, Tron is consistent, but it's not consistent with Tron Legacy.
Right.
Now.
One is, like, a very late 70s, early 80s look of what we thought, like, the future and technology would be like. And there's a lot of, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, spirals and bigness to it, you know? And now it's very, like, sleek and sexy
and
dark.
And, well, but... That can be explained in universe, right?
I mean, yeah, no, it is explained in universe, but it is still nonetheless two very different aesthetics that happen. Like,
the
they're similar.
The future of the past is very blocky, and now we're all about curves.
Yeah, now we are. Give me them curves.
We're all about the circles. As
thick.
Weird as the first Tron looked, I really enjoy that aesthetic a lot.
No, I do too. Like, again, it's very much of its time.
I think it's
like,
super
you
cool.
Look at it and you can realize, oh, this is 1979 happening in front of me. But it is like, it is a very effective and very consistent visual style.
I agree.
Yeah.
There was one on your list, but we kind of blew past it.
That's my list right there.
Thank you.
That's my list. I'm sticking to it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I wanted to, before we recorded, I did want to show you guys, like, a picture or a few stills of this Bollywood movie, Savadia, which is by Sanjali Bhansali. It was Ranbir Kapoor's first movie. None of this means anything to you guys.
Nope.
But it's based off of a Russian short story called Five Nights or something by Dostoevsky.
Oh! I've heard of it. I only have read it, though.
This is just the poster. I'm trying to find stills. But anyway, it takes place over the course of, like, several nights. Sanjali Bhansali is sort of known for these, like, very... what's the word? Like, extravagant?
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous production design.
Opulent.
Sets. Yeah, very opulent movies. He's, like, I guess you could say he's the Moulin Rouge.
Baz Luhrmann.
He's the Baz Luhrmann of Bollywood, in a way, you could say. So this is kind of
all that entails.
Like, all of the stills you're gonna see are gonna have this, like, lovely blue, like, moonlit feel to them. Like, that's a still from the movie.
It's
really pretty.
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous movie. Like, the costumes are great, like, the lighting is gorgeous, and it's... You never see, like, any day in that movie. It takes place over five nights, but you don't see the days. You only see the nights.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool, though. I mean, that lets them do more playful things with lighting.
Yeah. That's my number one visual example of, like, this was not a good movie. It's, like, really flawed. The story's kind of, like, meh. But it was a good debut for this actor, who's a very good actor.
And it was gorgeous to look at.
And it was very good to look at. And he was very good to look at.
Everyone won, except for the script supervisor.
I mean, the story's kind of like... It's not really about the story. Like, I think it's sort of the same... You could say the same thing about Riding the Bullet. Like, the atmosphere is better than the story it's telling around it.
Well, you mentioned he's sort of like Baz Luhrmann. I would say that's most of his movies are sort of like that.
I guess. Like, Moulin Rouge, I would say, has a better story than this movie that I'm talking about.
But I mean, like, the visuals are always, like...
Number one with a bullet.
The world... number one with a ride in the bullet? The visuals are always, like, the most cohesive and well-thought-out portion of his movies, for me, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even down to Romeo plus Juliet, which...
Yeah.
Say what you will about how that's staged, it is a very, like, coherent vision of what that looks like.
True. Mm-hmm. Strictly Ballroom was pretty, like... maybe, I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but I don't know if it was just because he was younger and didn't have as many resources back then, but out of all of his movies, it was the least sparkly.
It is his first one, though.
Yeah.
It felt very, like, real.
Yeah,
compared to Moulin Rouge.
There are parts of it that do more than others.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just him finding his own sense of style that he didn't quite have.
Yeah, I always wondered how much of that was, like, he's a new director, he doesn't have the money for all this glitter yet.
Yeah.
Or, like, it was meant to be more realistic and grounded.
See, like, but there's also, like, when you look at everyone's costumes in the movie, like, everyone's hair is, like, enormous and, like, pastel.
Yeah.
And everyone has, like, these bright, ridiculous, like, suits on and everything like that. And, like, his dad, isn't the main character's dad, like, always wearing, like, pants or, like, up here or something? Like, he's, like, a cartoon character.
And glasses that are, like, half the size of his head, and he acts like a cartoon turtle because he's always just sort of like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts about that is all the women's bangs are bleached. And, like, a thin fin going across the top of the head. I was rewatching this movie recently. You can see moments of the heightened reality that he, like, gets into more in his later movies.
Yeah.
But you're right, this one is a little more stripped down.
Wasn't there supposed to be, like, a subplot of the movie where she wasn't attractive, but then she does she takes her glasses off and she is?
Yeah.
Basically?
Yeah. Well, and lets her hair down.
Yeah. This movie.
Yeah.
It's not a great movie. Again, it's just, like... It
sure is fun, though.
Yeah, it's alright.
Ken Jennings is Spawn Rama.
So yeah, I don't know that I have a whole lot of other like Savadio was the one I came to sell, I think, for visuals. So there are others that I put on my list that were there for other reasons. Visuals are, I guess, a part of it, but
I mean, is it fair to say even like oh god, what's her name? Like a Nancy Meyers movie has like that weird sort of sense because it's all, you know, big white ladies and big white kitchens.
And just, like, it is so, like, the
but
most...
But it's a visual...
Everything is West Elm and Pottery Barn.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that.
It's like it is, but,
it's
like...
It's, like, the most uninteresting...
Oh, yeah, it is.
I'm not saying, like... Yeah, I'm not saying it's fun or particularly, like, unique to look at, but it does have, like, a look to it, you know?
Is that like we were saying, like, it's not, if not consistent?
Yeah. It's a shady thing to say, like, well, you were consistent. I also find it's an atmosphere that tends to, like, sap drama out of everything, because I always feel reassured by the way everything looks.
I mean, I
know it's like watching HGTV.
I would argue just, like, the script tends to sap drama out of everything.
Yeah. But I would say the script in that case could also contribute to that, because it's just, like, the visuals are reflecting the very rich, cushy lifestyle that everyone in those movies
has. But you just, like, every time someone's having an argument, you're like, but the feng shui in this kitchen.
Is amazing. Wow. You know what? They'll get over it, and then they'll share mimosas tomorrow at brunch.
God, is that a blue island? They're beautiful. They're very trendy this year.
I love the tile work on her pool.
Oh, man. All right, I'm recycling. I'm closing the book on this one.
The other one I wanted to touch on is, and I feel like this surfaces occasionally, I know it's not everyone's favorite, but I fucking love Speed Racer.
I mean, it's not... I don't know why you say that, because everyone that I am around is obsessed with Speed Racer. I'm the only outlier that's like, it's not good.
I feel like a lot of people do like Speed Racer. Like, people who have actually seen it.
Yeah.
I mentioned it to people that are like, that movie was garbage. And I was just like, I thought it looked so cool.
No, I mean, like...
You've probably talked to me about it, and I probably told you it's fucking garbage.
I mean,
but everyone else is like, annoyingly, it's really fun. And
very
cool.
Long.
Pancakes are love.
You know what?
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
They are. It's very long. That's really, like, the biggest problem I have with it, is that, like, it's this Saturday morning cartoon which lasted 20 minutes on TV, and the movie's, like, 2 fucking hours.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't trim some of the fat out of this shit. But that said, it has a very unique visual style.
It does.
A visual style that I've never seen
before.
I can't
deny that it is bright and fluorescent.
Right. Whether or not you like that style, of course, is entirely subjective. My favorite review said something that it was like pouring molten Starburst onto your eyes.
Yes.
And, like, that's true. It's exactly like that.
I would also say it's less of of a movie with a narrative and more of a showcase for really stunning animation.
Right, but then again, it's 2 hours long.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it were a tight 90, we'd be having a different chat right now.
True,
I think.
Very true.
Yeah, I do like Speed Racer, but it's got its problems.
I agree. It's not a perfect
movie. No, an inheritance of the sort, like Racer X, X, Rex, Racer, Racer X. Gee, who do you think the mysterious masked man is? You think it's going to be your long-lost brother, Speed?
The Japanese
it's
guy.
It's got Robbie Rotten syndrome.
Yeah,
all over.
Exactly.
Only one bad guy in this town.
Yeah.
His name is Rotten.
All right. And yeah, Sin City is definitely up there. Like you.
Yeah, it's got a visual style.
Love it or hate
yeah,
it.
No, again, yeah, no. Like you conclude, you would look at a frame of it and be like, "Well, this is Sin City."
However,
right.
I don't like owe it to Sin City the movie. I owe it to the fact that it adhered to the style of the original graphic novel.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Ew.
Probably a piece of cake.
I hope.
It might have been me.
That
I'm sorry about that. Okay, let's move on from the visuals. Let's go on to my second category, which was movies that evoke a certain feeling very strongly. For me, looking at the list that I wrote for myself, I realized very quickly that a lot of these were that I listed were about the feeling of loneliness or isolation. Let's not delve into that psychologically too much.
No, we're good.
So I wrote down Gravity,
mm-hmm.
Life of Pi, The
yeah.
Martian. I also included horror adjacent things like The Woman in Black.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In certain, not in the nighttime scary scenes, in the daytime scenes.
Right.
I would also, in a certain way, this isn't loneliness or isolation per se. But I also want to include in the emotions category The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the new one with...
Jim Carrey.
Not with Jim Carrey.
No. Steve Carell.
No. Neither of those people.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The
Jewish
guy.
Ben Stiller.
Oh, wow.
What the fuck, you guys?
I don't know. Man, I never saw the movie.
With Ben Stiller.
Wasn't he attached to it for a long time?
It is
Jim
on
Carrey?
Blu-ray right over there.
I know it is, and I've still never seen it, and I never will.
Why won't you see it?
I haven't seen the original.
I think you should at least try.
I haven't seen the original either.
Well, I mean, there's no reason why you should do the original. It's from the 40s with Danny Kaye.
Yeah, I would rather watch the original so I can see Danny Kaye sing about hats.
I've shown you that.
I mean, I know. I knew that before you, that, like, that's a thing.
Is it from that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's from
that. Wait, what is that? There is a scene in the original
the
with Danny Kaye.
Which I have also
okay.
been shown by Lou. I just didn't know that was from that movie.
Woman
yeah.
is
yeah.
the end of the song.
Yeah.
Which is very true about Danny Kaye.
We don't know that.
Well,
he
probably
do. He didn't hate women.
We didn't hate him.
He just wasn't a fan of their
made,
bodies,
yeah.
actually.
Anyway, the new one. I like both of those movies, by the way. I like both versions of Ultimate for very different reasons. But the second one, I wouldn't tell you was like a great overall movie, but I think like...
Which one?
The newer
the
version
Jim Carrey
of Ultimate.
Okay.
No! The Ben Stiller one.
Oh, you mean the one with Steve Carell?
Yes, love that
Jim
Carrey and Steve Carell alternate the roles.
By the way,
it's like the Broadway production of Little Foxes with Cynthia Nixon and
Steve Carell is like not a far cry.
Yeah. Every scene they just switch parts.
Steve Carell is not a far cry for like the kind of tone they were going for.
No, sad.
They were going
yeah.
for like sad,
sad man,
sad comedy
yeah.
man.
Yeah, sad comedy man.
Although that's kind of what Ben Stiller does now, is just sad comedy man.
Yeah, and you
yeah.
know Ben Stiller is not a bad actor. He was great in Zero Effect. He was good in this movie.
Sure.
He can do it when there's a good script or when the mood strikes him. I think the mood struck him in this movie. But no, like we can all agree that Gravity really nails isolation, right? Like
yeah, mm-hmm. it does.
I mean,
For obvious reasons,
but like, and it's not like you could avoid it when you set your movie in the space above the Earth, but the fact that the whole movie takes place with like this giant half globe, like looming
mm-hmm.
below you. Like you can see Earth, but it's so far away.
Yeah.
I also think it really well, at least when I first saw it, I think it successfully captured this like feeling of anxiety that could. I mean, so like yes, it's beautiful when she's inside of it and she's like, wow, the like ceaseless void is actually really pretty from inside here. But when she's floating out there, it is, at least at the time, I felt like, holy shit, that must be fucking terrifying to
mm-hmm.
think that you're just going to get like. Sucked into this endless black.
Yeah. In theater, it was one of the most visceral experiences I've ever had.
Absolutely.
Like, possibly the most visceral experience. It was, like, I think it loses something when I've seen it on TV, like on ATV. Like, it's still a good movie, and I think it's still a lot, you know, there's a lot to recommend there, but it's never been quite the same.
It's one of the few that I was like, wow, this movie really works at its best in IMAX.
And 3D.
Yep.
Because when it's, when it's fully plunging you into it, it goes right from, like, wonder to sheer terror so quickly.
There's that moment where she gets back into the spacecraft and takes off all of the kit and just sleeps like a baby.
She sort of holds herself.
Yeah, she's in like the fetal position even. Yeah.
And like she's, it's like backed up of the window with the earth at the window.
Yeah.
I also thought it's a really beautiful moment where she's sort of talking to the guy on the radio, but it's really more to herself. But it's some guy, I think he was an Inuit.
He's in China.
Or some,
No, he's in, it's somewhere far north, because the Blu-ray there's like a short film.
He's an Inuit, isn't he?
Yeah, somewhere far north, I said. Yeah.
I thought it was China.
No, because like there's a feature on the Blu-ray of like the guy talking to her on the radio. Like it's a short film that Alfonso Cuarón's son did, I think.
Oh.
Where it's like what's happening with him while she's in space. And I think the last shot is like the debris in the sky streaking across. It's really good.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. Anyway. When she's talking to the guy on the radio.
It's like a really, it's a sweet but still very melancholy moment, because you're like, wow, this is the most human connection she's had in this whole ordeal, aside from imaginary George Clooney.
Yeah.
And
it's not going to do her any good, like, at the end of the day. Like, it's just like, you have a human connection, that he's not speaking your language, he can't help you in any way, shape, or form. But, like, this is what you got. This is what you got before you're going to, you know, die up here.
It's like you reach for it, and it for a second it feels kind of nice, but then you realize it's only emphasizing how isolated and alone she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there's that, the thing with she's back in that, like, she's out in space, and then she gets back into that area and she sleeps. You get that same feeling when you're playing a game like Knights of Zombie Army, when you know that you're in danger at all times, except you get into like a safe room, and like there's that sense of like, this is the, like, I have this moment until I decide that I want to go back into the shit.
I'm going to subject myself to freakouts and stress.
Yeah.
Where I'm running out of ammo and just threw my last grenade, but in the safe house. I'm good, baby.
That, like, I don't know, that I really connect to that idea of, like, being in a place where, like, you have no control of the situation, you're gonna be fucked, but knowing that, like, you can enter a place periodically where it's like, this is safe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one, this is, like, any year nothing can touch me.
Yeah. This is my space apart.
And it is also the feeling that knowing that outside that space, though, everything else is still going to hell. Like, like, you may have this little space, but, like, you can't be here forever, you know?
Yes,
like, you have to leave at some point.
It's like the feeling of coming in from a storm, or if it's when it's raining outside, but you're in bed, and you're just sort of like, it's so nice in here.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't even know. Like, it's like, for me, it's almost like when it's 100 degrees out, it's a summer day, and, like, I'm, you know, on my lunch break or something, and if I stop at, like, Target or something, I'm inside for like 20 minutes, like, God, it's so nice and air conditioned here. But in like 20 minutes, I'm gonna have to go out back to the fucking sun and walk across the fence back to my office. Like, it's just that little respite that you know is like temporary, but you still like, you're still appreciating every single second, even though you know that like soon you're gonna be back out in the fucking wilderness, baby.
Totally.
I got that like when I was like when I was vacationing in Vancouver and I was averaging walking like 8 miles a day, and it would be like at the end of the day, and I was like having dinner, I'd be like, well, I'm gonna have to walk another 20 fucking goddamn minutes after I'm like, I'm done. I hiked yesterday. I'm fucking exhausted. But, like, right now I'm fine.
Yeah.
That's later.
No, yeah. And then you get your little break. You manage to do the 25-minute walk. You get back and you're like, man, I'm never fucking moving.
Yeah. It's kind of like this nice notion that, like, suffering isn't permanent.
Right.
It's not like
there
are breaks. Like, you will have breaks. Like, it's knowing that, like, you're going to be in pain and, like, something's going to suck, but, like, there will be respite. It's not like
eternal suffering. Yeah.
Yeah,
right. That is a good feeling.
It is a good feeling. It's like eventually things end for a bit.
Eventually, the sun will just explode.
Was there a feelings atmosphere movie you had in mind, Brendan?
I didn't really. It was I think
Gravity's a big one. I think for all.
Yeah, no, Gravity. I agree with you definitely. The thing I would say about The Martian, though, I think The Martian does do a good job with making him feel isolated, but that's not the general tone of the movie. It's not something that I would have thought of. Like, it's not. This isn't a movie that I've really care to discuss that much. It's more just like, oh, this is an example of something. Castaway.
Yeah. The Martian.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
Casper?
Castaway. Yes, Casper.
Casper. With Christina Ricci and Jen Sawa.
When Bill Pullman dies and then has to come back as a ghost.
But he's
and
like
they
a
bring
dad
him back
ghost.
To, yeah, then they bring him back to life by not bringing Casper back to life. And so Christina Ricci's ghost mom brings Casper back to life. Scared the shit out of me.
And then we get like evil super lady ghost or whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah, do you know, like,
Christine Moriarty wasn't her name?
Kathy Moriarty. Do you know, I always fucking thought that was Kathleen Turner. I have no idea why, like, in my head, though. I was like, Kathleen Turner is in Casper. She's in the movie Casper. And I looked it up on IMDb years ago, and I was like, who's this woman? Why aren't you Kathleen Turner?
So, Kathy Moriarty, in my mind, is sort of, like, discount Kathleen Turner, because they both have this whiskey and cigarettes voice.
Yeah, they do. They have, like, a similar look.
Right.
Like, it's, like, a very refined, wealthy lady look.
Blonde.
Yeah.
The Casper vignette has gone on too long.
Too long.
What about Casper and Wendy, A Spirited Beginning?
No.
All right.
The one last, like, feelings movie I wanted to put in there, and I
have one more, too.
I struggle to encapsulate why it makes me feel this way. But watching Black Swan gives me such an overwhelming feeling of, like, nightmare anxiety that I really... Like, by the end of it, I'm ready for the movie to be over because I feel like I need to wake up from this fucking terrible,
well,
terrible dream.
Good. I was thinking, going off that, actually, I just thought of Picnic at Hanging Rock, where it's like every single scene of the movie, it's like something's not quite right here. Like, it looks fine. It looks like a bright, sunny day in the Australian outback. Like, everyone looks okay. Nothing's wrong with this. But nonetheless, like, it just feels not quite right.
I wanted to ask you, did you watch the...
I did not care for
it. New adaptation? Not good?
Your mileage may vary. I thought it padded the story too much.
Okay.
It didn't need that padding.
All right.
Just stick with the movie.
All right. I wanted to talk about Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the new one, because I think it's the opposite end of the feeling of being alone, but in the opposite sense from, like, loneliness, where, like, the movie focuses on, like, the fact that this is a guy that hasn't had any significant life experiences. And over the course of the movie, like, the basic plot line is, like, he has to get this, like, the magazine he works for is closing. I don't know if you guys know anything about this, so I'm just going to give you a brief plot line.
I know a little bit, but
And it's, like, Life, but magazine. But, like, imagine Life shut down. And they're like, this is our last issue. There's this famous photographer. He takes great pictures. We want him to have the last cover photo. And he says he's got a great one. But, and, like, the producers or the higher-ups hear about it, but, like, the negative is missing. And they're like, what the fuck is it? And Walter Mitty works in the negatives department, and, like, he's sort of a friend of this photographer. And, like, the one negative that he's supposed to cut out is, like, gone. And he's like, oh my god, I have to find this guy. But he's, like, a weird photojournalist who goes around the world. I'm gonna have to go track him down, but I have to because it's my job. He just thought, like, he's gonna chase him around the world to, like, find this photo. So he has to go to all these places. And he sort of does this, like, wild goose chase, like, trying to follow the places that he's been by going to the places in the photographs.
Oh, okay.
So he goes to, like, Iceland, and then he goes to, like, he has to go to, like, Afghanistan, and, like, he has to eventually, like, climb Everest. Like, he does all these crazy things in pursuit of, the photographer. And, like, he's pretty much alone doing it. Like, he goes to Iceland when the volcano, like, when a volcano's erupting. At one point, and he has to, like, fly away from the volcano. And he's alone the whole time, but it's a different... It's the opposite sense of alone, where it's like, you are the only... You're alone. You have to do this thing. And, like, it's a positive feeling of, like, yeah, this is really terrifying, but you have to do it. It's like a sink or swim situation, and you gotta swim. You know what I mean?
So it's like, it's the feeling of finding it in yourself to...
Yeah, to, like, to just get over it and do the thing that you set out to do.
Mm.
And he does the thing. Like, he, like, without fail in the movie, like, he does it. And it reminds me of, like, all of the times in my life where I've, like, when I went to England by myself and I had to, like, learn to do all this shit. And, like, when I went on vacation by myself and, like...
So it's more, like, empowering alone.
But yeah. It's like, there are... Like, these are the times when you find out, really when you're alone, is, like, when you can find out what you are capable of.
Okay.
Because no one else is there to help you. That feeling of, like, you're going to do this or you're not going to do it. No one else can help you right now. So you're going to find out what your limits are. And it's up to you to challenge yourself and push you. Because if you don't, you're not going to do the thing you want to do.
I like that.
So that, I don't know, I put that on there because I think that's why I might connect to this movie a little bit.
Mm.
It's good. There's a song like that, too. There's a song called Love 40 Down by, I don't know, Frank Turner is his name, the artist. Forgot his name for a second. It's Frank Turner. It's a great song. It's a great artist. But it's a similar feeling of, like, I think there's a line in the song where it's like, there's no one waiting for me when I'm done. So it's like, this is it.
It's all for me.
It's just for me. I'm doing this for me. And I'm only going to support myself if I don't do this. And that's a good... It's kind of a good feeling in and of itself.
Yeah.
So I threw that on there. All right. That's all I got. All
right.
Last category! Movies that you associate very strongly with a certain thing, whether it's like a memory or a time of year.
Or a kind of day.
Yeah. I have this with like songs, I have it with movies. I would never watch... Honestly, it felt a little weird watching The Music Man a couple weeks ago, or a week or two ago. Because it was fall. You don't watch The Music Man in the fall.
When do you... Summer?
It's a summer movie.
Oh, I see.
It just...
Usually, yeah.
Scream summer.
We usually watch it around the 4th of July.
Yeah,
it just didn't happen this year because we were busy.
It's part of it because it's also like a marching band music.
I mean, but it is literally set in the summer.
It is set in the 4th of July.
It's like Americana. It's just like there's so much of what you associate with that time of year. You know, like people are outdoors until late at night. Like, you know, it's just you can wander around until 9 o'clock and the weather is nice and it won't matter. Like if you want to go down by the pond that late, then go down by the pond.
Down by the footbridge.
Yes, exactly. You're about 28 years too late, Chris.
I do want to say, I loved watching that movie. It was so good.
Well, we're glad you did.
It's so charming and magical. It was hard for me to pick, like, a favorite sequence. They were all just so, like, fucking great. The library sequence was, like, really big in my heart, though.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
But it's very summery.
I agree with you, yeah. It is, I think, best suited for that time of year.
Yeah. And it would feel weird to me watching it in winter,
I feel like. I don't know why, it just would to me.
Because I love the movie and I want to watch it at least once a year, but I would never do it in the winter.
Yeah.
That's so much car alarm.
Very fancy. Sleepy Hollow, I mean, it's a horror movie, I guess, in a way, but it's not really scary.
No, it's not. It's just atmospheric.
Like
if there was a Sleepy Hollow-themed Halloween decoration set, like, I would have that up everywhere, you know what I mean? Like, not like, you know, with Ichabod Crane on it, but, like, something that would feel at home in that movie.
I agree with you. I don't find it scary, but I do find it to be, like, it's very autumnal.
Yeah.
It is very Halloween.
It's very sort of just, like, creepy more than scary. Like, it feels just a little, you know, it's just a little dark.
I love all of the plays, because there's kind of a wash over a lot of the film that makes it a little bit... like they turn the contrast up.
Desaturated.
Yeah. But then it gives like those pops of red, like when Christina Ricci uses that red chalk to draw like the pentacle or whatever on the floor, it like really pops because everything else is just so turned up.
Right. No, it's really interesting actually. If you watch the making of stuff, like the blood when they filmed on set is like orange because when they desaturate it, it looks a deep red then.
Interesting.
So they have to like take into consideration how everything will look when you turn the colors down.
That's fascinating.
It's really neat and it's really impressive that you can make this entire world look so visually consistent and still have those like pops of red that show up every now and then, which is, you know, very well suited for a movie like this. Like, again, like you said, it's set in the wilderness, it's set in autumn, like, and there's lots of blood because there's a headless horseman cutting off people's heads.
Yep.
There's giant pumpkins. There's Casper Van Dien getting his head taken off.
I mean, the reason I put Riding the Bullet on our radar is because I think I said it reminds me of like being alone at night and having to like walk back to my car from a certain distance when it's a chill evening.
Mm.
Or like, I don't know, just like being out and like in, because a lot of the movie is like him
on
walking
road,
at night
on
a road.
There's something creepy about that, right? Because it's like, well, I think it's the idea is that like you, civilization is there because there's a road there, but not necessarily anyone is there, right? Like either like you're driving through the woods, so like there is a road there. So again, as I said, like people put that road there. You know that like people travel that road.
Yeah.
But nonetheless you're surrounded by the wilderness. Or even like here, like in JP or something late at night, where it's like you're surrounded by buildings, you're surrounded by houses, there are lights on, but if there's no one there, it's still just very unsettling. Like the absence of humanity in the city.
You're saying like with Picnic at Rock, there's like it's not
Picnic at Rock.
Yeah, 3 out of 4. Picnic at Hanging Rock,
whatever. But with this movie, it's more like there's nothing immediately threatening there, but the sense of possibility is there.
Mm-hmm.
So like, even though it's not, it like could, it's a street night. It could be peaceful.
Right.
It could also be like there could be a killer or a wolf or something horrible anywhere, anytime, and like that sense of like unknown. Like, I don't know, I don't know if I told you this, when I was a kid, I used to sneak out of the house at night and go out into the woods for no reason other than, like, to, as, like, a self-test of courage.
Mm-hmm.
It was a weird thing I used to do. And then when I was older, I couldn't do it anymore. Like, maybe it was because I was stupid when I was a kid, and I was like, fuck it. YOLO. And then when I was older, I was more able to be like, I could enumerate the things that could kill me in the forest. And, like, the more I knew about what could be out there, the more I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the connection I have to writing the bullet,
oh,
I think.
Almost when you put it that way, it makes it sound like it's, like, bravery and ignorance.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't do it. The other day, I remember being, like, I don't know, high school or college age, and I couldn't do it anymore. I was like, I can't go outside right now.
It's also sort of that feeling like, that's happened to me before when I've been, like, alone in the apartment, and it's, like, really dark, and I know that I'm alone, but it still feels a little creepy of just, like...
Yeah. And the woman in black, when I was talking about those daytime scenes, like, where Harry Potter goes to the house and has to, like... It's daytime, he's just in this old creepy house,
yeah,
and just has a mountain of paperwork to go through, and he's the only one, the house is on an island in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
and he just has to, like, sit there and, like, well, it's fucking creepy as hell, we all don't like to be in the house by ourselves, but also I've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
It has that feeling of, like, you know, having to watch the house when my parents are on vacation, or, like, I just know I'm the only one here. It's very evident that you're the only one here, so if anything happens... It's just you. Like, that's another feeling of itself. It's like, I don't know, I think we can all relate to that feeling at different times.
Mm-hmm. And when you get into that feeling, too, it's like you find it really easy to stay psyched up about it.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, you know that it's not a rational thing, but you're just like, but what if?
Yeah. And lastly, to be a little bit more, to be a little bit less creepy, I talked about, before we recorded, Peter and the Wolf.
Disney
animated movie. I used to watch this movie. My grandmother had a bunch of, like, old VHS tapes, and she had, like, Donald Duck's Math Magic.
Yep,
which I love, by the way.
Good call.
Cover to cover, I know that every minute of that movie. She also had Peter and the Wolf in VHS. I used to watch all the time. And at one point, or at some point, or at multiple points, I was eating Oreos while watching the movie. We all like Oreos. I mean, I like Oreos.
We all like Oreos.
We all like Oreos.
And at some point, I associated the taste... Because they do a lot of snow dives in that movie.
Right.
Like, people are constantly getting, like, shoved in the snow. It's a very snowy movie. And at some point, because of the texture of the snow in the movie and the fact that I was eating Oreos, I just thought the snow must taste like Oreo cream.
What a magical world that is.
Must be,
almost,
right?
Wonka-esque.
I think it's also just this idea of, like... food in animated movies always looks so good because it's like this perfect ideal version of it. So, like, you look at that snow and it's, like, so perfect.
Yeah.
And, like, so, like, it's like, it's not like you go outside and it's like, oh, it's slushy, there's brown everywhere.
No,
it's like
so
there's this
white,
beautiful coat of white snow
puffy.
Over everything. So, like, it must taste like this, like, sweet sugar, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you licked it, it would taste delicious.
It has,
would just
like,
taste
the
like
perfect
water.
Texture when you fall into it.
Right.
It, like, folds.
Right. Like, you get up and you have that little, like, pile of snow on your head.
Almost like whipped cream.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah.
Animation, man.
If I was to watch it today, I would still look at that snow and just think, I would want Oreos, probably.
Or just the cream. Give me that cream.
Give me that cream.
Give me that cream.
Hashtag. Give me that cream.
If there was ever a time when you associate Oreos with the movie, tweet at us. Hashtag
give me that
cream.
Oh, man.
We have fun.
It's a shorter one this week, but I'm fine with it.
Yep, me too.
Yeah.
This is a shorter one?
Yeah, we've only been talking for 40 minutes.
Okay.
Isn't that sad? Remember when these were like 15 minutes long when we first started?
Yeah.
We didn't have anything to say.
Oh, God, were
memories.
Those the days? And we made recommendations.
Ugh, yeah.
And now we got so much stuff to
yep,
say.
Yep, now we have to actually say things.
All right. I'm wrapping it up.
Yeah, right. Wrap it up.
Put a bow on
it. See us in... Well, not see us. You can't ever see us.
See us with your ears.
Hear us. In 2 weeks.
Put your earbuds in your eye sockets. Take a look at what we look like.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. You can look through them if you just shove them in your eyes.
Yep. All right, guys. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll talk about riding the bullet.
Yep.
It's going to be a good time.
And we're going to ride a bullet.
We're going to ride the bullet.
Yes, we will.
All right, guys. Catch you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye-bye.